And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Batter up! Welcome to No Bunts, the show for the casual baseball fan here on The Athletic. I'm Tass Mellis in the Classic Factory in Atlanta, Georgia. And with me, making the magic happen, is super producer JD.
Hello. Oh, hello.
Hello, there he is. And from across the globe, joining me every single week, my co-host, Joel McMillan in Taiwan. Joel, what's up?
Still kind of buzzing from that big game last night, but yeah, things are well. Things are well in Taiwan.
All right, first question. Have the cats been fed? Because we've got to ask you every single week. It's the evening there. They just had dinner, I assume?
They just had dinner. Yeah, we had to switch their time to 8 o'clock because of the show. Usually they eat at around 9 or 9:30. Yeah, they get pretty vocal around dinner time, so we had to feed them early.
All right, if you're new to No Bunts, excited to join the Athletic Baseball feed this season. Wherever you get your pods, join us or on the Athletic Baseball Show on YouTube. We are streaming every single Wednesday. Going to talk about a lot of fun stuff this season. Of course, the storylines, but random stuff. We're going to pop some packs of cards. We're going to talk about the best spots for standing room only in a ballpark. We got to rank those, Joel. We're going to talk about food at ballparks. I'm sure we got to talk about something next week. We don't know what our show is going to be next week, Joel. We've got to decide on that. Any thoughts? Mm-hmm. Maybe the origin of baseball. I was talking to a friend who loves cricket. Maybe we'll go back a couple centuries. What do you think?
We could hop in the time machine. Yeah, we could definitely do that. I like cricket too. I've been to a couple of cricket games in Australia. A lot of fun.
All right. We'll save that for off air. But I love the cricket music, JD. Fantastic stuff. Okay, coming up on the show, Joel is going to tell us why the WBC is a legitimate tournament and you should take it seriously every time it comes around. We'll talk about the top five articles of clothing from the 2023 tournament, the uniform, the batting helmets. And Joel's going to give us the top five storylines from all five WBCs. But first, here are the top five things you need to know from the 2023 WBC.
Top five.
Just had to put it in a list, Joel. I just had to put it in a list. We'll go 5-1. Of course, we're going to start with the man who made it happen. You're wearing your Japanese sweater over there, Joel. Yes.
Got to.
Shohei Ohtani. And at number five, before we get to him versus Trout, which was absolutely phenomenal to finish the tournament, I thought this was a different Shohei Ohtani, even leading up to that. I felt he was a little bit more bold. He was just a little bit different. Maybe America's rubbing off on him a little bit, because I thought there was a couple stories here I wanted to share with you. He usually doesn't take batting practice on the field before the game. He likes to make it happen, you know, behind the scenes in the batting cages. But before the semifinal against Mexico, he took batting practice and put on a mammoth power display, as Ken Rosenthal called it, repeatedly hitting balls into the second deck in right and center field where not a lot of major leaguers could put it. And he said, "I knew Team Mexico was watching, so I wanted to send a little message. If you leave a ball out there, that's what's going to happen." And then he did the same before the final against the U.S. Glorious stuff, Joel. Was there a different Ohtani in this tournament?
That's a good question. I mean, he certainly played like he had extra motivation. I don't know if he did. I mean, I know he's going into his contract year, but you know, the WBC means a great deal to Japanese baseball fans. Baseball's taken very seriously here. Obviously, Ohtani's a student of the game. Like, the way he prepares, the way he approaches to play this game is really second to none. And could playing in America have rubbed off on him a bit? I mean, sure, it's possible. He's been, I think, in the league for 5 years now. But yeah, he looked very, very focused. And Tass, I think the thing that really stood out to me, like not only his performance on the field, but I truly think he's embraced being a superstar and like he truly knows it now. That's kind of always existed like in MLB, but I kind of feel like it's more recently, like when after he won the MVP, people could, you know, kind of see like, okay, this guy's the real deal. And this event just kind of put him in another stratosphere in terms of, you know, like his stock and, you know, his like him being recognizable and him just being like a global sports icon at this point. Like, I think he's well on his way there. And I think that, you know, the way he carried himself in this tournament really reflected that.
And the emotion we saw in the semifinal when he went up in the ninth, bottom of the ninth there against Mexico. They're down 5-4. He leads off the bottom of the ninth. And apparently his teammate Lars Nootbaar heard Ohtani say he made up his mind he was going to get on base. Mm-hmm. Ohtani just said it in the dugout. Yeah, I'm getting on base. And he was that confident. And Nootbaar thought to himself, man, I wish I could just make up my mind and get on base in that situation. First pitch, roped a double, was keeping it away from Randy Arozarena. We'll get to him later and what a tournament he had. And then, he got to second base. And I'm not sure if you've seen this type of emotion from Ohtani before, Joel, but just letting it out, you know, pumping his arms. It doesn't seem Ohtani-like, but this side of Ohtani that people hadn't seen before. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the Japanese have a reputation, their baseball team, of being very reserved, very respectful, not showing a lot of emotion. So for not only Ohtani, but some of the other Japanese players to kind of show that outward emotion, I think that's a good thing to see. And I think it's a reflection of how other cultures outside of Japanese baseball are affecting baseball as a whole, the way it's played, the way it's enjoyed, the way it's celebrated. And I think this is nothing but a good thing. I mean, they're human beings, you know, they're going to show emotion. I understand that's part of their culture of being reserved and not showing too much emotion, but I certainly don't think it's a bad thing. And in an event like this, I think it's a fantastic thing. You know, he should be up and showing emotion and clapping his hands and doing all these things. It's a perfectly natural reaction to a moment like that. So it's good to see. It's definitely out of character for him, but I think it just kind of adds another, you know, layer of depth to kind of his overall character and his overall mystique. We just, you know, Tass, we haven't really had a chance to see that emotion out of Ohtani because unfortunately the Angels really haven't played in any meaningful game since he's become an Angel. So, you know, this was kind of the first time we got to see Ohtani play in meaningful games. I believe he played in the prior WBC as well, but, you know, he wasn't as well known then. So, you know, yeah, this was just a different side of him, but very cool to see.
Yeah, the lore just deepens with this dude. I saw Ann Rogers of MLB say that she was in the Royals clubhouse during spring training. They're watching the game, and everybody just in awe of Ohtani and everything he does. And that's happened the last few years, happened at the All-Star game with people taking pictures of him. It's getting sort of Michael Jordan-like. And that connects us to number four here on the top five things you need to know. Japan's dominance. Japan ran the table in this tournament, going 7-0. We got the championship game that we wanted, U.S. versus Japan, the two best teams meeting in the final. And the U.S. had turned it on, looked like they could repeat, but Japan wins their third title in the five WBCs. The U.S. has won the previous one that was in 2017, and the Dominican Republic has won as well. And let's just jump to the end, Joel, because we've buried it for long enough. Shohei Ohtani got to pitch to his Angels teammate, Mike Trout, to finish the game. Storybook-like. Yeah. Unbelievable. The story, the question was, would Ohtani pitch? Japanese manager keeping it close to the vest. After he hit in the fifth, he was DHing in this game, he walked to the bullpen. And that was it was pretty cool. The cameras caught him walking to the bullpen behind the fence, unlike in Japan where they can warm him up apparently behind the dugout.
Yeah.
And so that was a different wrinkle. And he went out there and he warmed up, but he didn't pitch until the ninth. And did it work out so perfectly. Japan mm-hmm. with a 3-2 lead. Mike Trout was scheduled to hit third. Jeff McNeil, what a great at-bat from him, earned a walk. Mm-hmm. And then Mookie Betts quickly hit into a double play. So no one on. Yeah. Ohtani versus Trout. And it went to a 3-2 count. A couple heaters Mike Trout swang through. And then those heaters were 100 miles per hour, by the way. And then he swung through the sweeper, the slider, whatever you want to call it, to get him and end the game. Glorious stuff, Joel. How did you feel mm-hmm. watching that at bat?
Oh, I mean, I was working actually when the game was going on. So I had to come back after work and rewatch it. I wish I had a shot in real time. I mean, it's surreal. It's arguably the two best players who play on the same team from different countries facing each other in, you know, the final out or what could be the final out of the WBC. You couldn't script it any better. You know, you couldn't script it any better. And let's be honest. I mean, I'm sure there's a bit of unspoken bragging rights between the two as a result of this. It was just amazing to see. And Trout, that whole at bat, I feel, was just sitting on fastballs. And he couldn't catch up to, two fastballs there. And yeah, he struck him out with a slider. But Tash, just really quickly, that is a masterclass. I know Trout struck out, but if you watch that at bat, he took Ohtani to a full count. And Tash, Trout sat on two balls over 100 miles an hour. That is an elite eye. That is not something that a lot of players can do. And especially in that moment. And there was a fastball that Ohtani threw and it just kind of cut at the last minute and it sailed out of zone and it was a ball.
Mm-hmm.
To recognize in that moment and take a ball. Taz, that is extremely, extremely difficult to do. That at bat was so fun to watch. And then I really think on that final strike, Trout was sitting fastball. Ohtani was like, you know, I've got you to swing at two of them. I'm just going to throw it by you again. And he went slider, which was pretty ballsy, but what a way to end the game. It was amazing. Just as a baseball fan, the better ending, unless Trout hit a walk-off home run that won the game for the USA, both would have been just as cool to see.
Yeah, phenomenal stuff. Yeah, I was watching it live. I'm surprised we got you on the time change, I guess, Joel. You couldn't watch it live just because it was in North America here. It was in Miami. Got you on the 12-hour time change. I guess you have a real life. I guess we don't pay you enough to do this full-time, unfortunately. Usually the time change, you know, it always gets you. It gets me when it's always across the world. It has to get you. But maybe we got to up your pay here on No Bunts so you can watch it live. But those misses were ridiculously close. It's a great point about that pitch that went 3-2. He tried to get him. It was 2-2. He tried to get him with that fastball. And he did miss. And then, yeah, the swept across the zone there from right to left. And Trout couldn't get it, and yeah, obviously a phenomenal tournament for Shohei Ohtani. To give mm-hmm. to give you his numbers, both on the hill and at bat, because he does both. He hit 435. he was on base 606 was his percentage. His slugging was 739. So there's his slash 435, 606, 739. Four doubles, a home run, and 1.86 ERA with 11 strikeouts and 9 2/3 because he started. And then he relieved in this one situation. He hadn't closed since the Japanese League in 2016 is when his last save came. And did that matter? No. He stepped up there and, as you said, solidified his place amongst the best, but solidified his place as the best, right, Joel?
I would say so. We saw it last night. I think Mike Trout is the best position player in the league still. I know some people might not agree with that, and that's, you know, perfectly logical. I think the biggest thing with Trout is he's just struggled to stay healthy the past couple of years. But when healthy, I still in my heart believe Trout is the best position player. But Ohtani is just in a tier above Trout, like in terms of talent. And that's crazy for me to say, but it's just the truth. I mean, no one can do what Ohtani does. I'm 100% in. I'm fully in. He's, like, in my opinion, he's the best player in the league today. Like, there's just no one else that can do what he does. I feel like we're running out of things to say about him at this point. I mean, nothing he does really surprises me. You're just in constant. Oh, I mean, Tass, he did it all this tournament. He started. He pitched great. He hit. He hit great. And then he closed out a one-run game in the ninth inning of the WBC. What more can he do, like, on the field? I mean, he did everything. So he just really kind of showed why he's the superstar, and he proved why he's the best player in the world. And the world saw that. You know, this was, I know we're going to talk about Randy Rosarena later, but this was really Shohei, I feel, his coming out party. You know, now people got to see what he truly was about, and it was amazing to see.
And I feel in this unique circumstance, there was even more to say about Shohei Ohtani. I know you just said we're kind of running out of things to say, but because he showed the emotion on that double, because he was, yeah, a little bit more cocky is the probably confident is the word when he comes out with showing everybody he can bomb it in BP, saying I was trying to send a message that was amazing. And in this tournament, which was phenomenal, we'll get to the best moments we've had in it, why it has a lot of weight amongst MLB players. And you mentioned Trout. Mm-hmm. Trout was living life in this tournament. He loved it so much. Yeah. He said, this is the funnest experience I've had on the baseball field. This guy has been around for a long time, considered the best baseball player, amongst his peers, arguably. He just enjoyed this tournament so much. So we'll mm-hmm. get to everything around the tournament and what it means and when it comes back 3 years from now, if there's any changes they should make. But I know you love this tournament, and I know everybody mm-hmm. loved this tournament. And as far as being here in North America, this had the most exposure in America that any WBC tournament has had. It's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And I love what Ken Rosenthal said about this tournament. Crazy as it sounds, the regular season looms as a letdown. The competition in WC is pure. It's just phenomenal. It's hard to duplicate. Mm-hmm. But anyways, we'll get more to that. I just needed to wax because it was so good. And just on the last point about Japan as we move on here, they did the waxing. They were so good. So many instances in this game where it felt like, I shouldn't say so many because the Americans didn't have a lot of chances, but the Japanese pitchers performed extremely well and got out of a couple jams over mm-hmm. and over and over again. So any final words here about the Japanese performance overall?
Well, I mean, Tass, just to that point right away, I mean, you know the old expression, baseball, good pitching is always going to be good hitting. And I think that was on display in the final. I mean, Japan's always got a reputation for, you know, having very strong starting pitching in this tournament. And this just goes to show, too, I mean, for casual American baseball fans who just think, oh, it's America, we got the best players and we're going to roll over every team. I can see how you could think that, but I mean, this goes to show you that baseball truly is an international game, and the parity between some of the countries in these international competitions and the level of talent, especially in Japan, you know, compared to the USA. I mean, of course, MLB is the best league. I'm not going to say it isn't, because of course it is. But in terms of just like raw talent and great players, I mean, the Japanese league and the Japanese players, they have excellent players. A lot of those guys that played for Team Japan could be starters on MLB teams. Now, would they be star players? Probably not. But I mean, they have a very good depth of talent where they can compete with a Dominican Republic, with a Puerto Rico, with a USA, where, you know, they have star-studded lineups. Japan might not have the sexy names, but they have the talent. They play good fundamental baseball. They've got excellent pitching. And, you know, like looking back the way this tournament unfolded, I'm not surprised that Japan won. Like if USA or Puerto Rico or the Dominicans had a one, I wouldn't have been surprised either. But I mean, this just goes to show you how strong Japanese baseball is. And the talent is a lot closer than a lot of people, you know, think between a country like the United States and Japan.
Maybe not sexy names, but fantastic names. Masataka Yoshida, a 3-run blast in the semifinal there, joining Boston this year. Munetaka Murakami, he had big home run in the final, and the walk-off double in the semifinal. He had, 56 homers last year in Japan mm-hmm. to set the single-season home run record for a Japanese player. and passing O, who had 55. So it was cool to see him break out, because he wasn't having a good tournament until the semis and then the final, but came through big time as his team did. Amazing stuff for Japan. Mm-hmm. Congratulations to them, and congratulations for you. You got to put on your sweater.
That's, so happy.
Do you wear that often? Quick question.
No, Tass, it's fitting a little tight. I bought this sweater in 2006 when I lived in Japan, so that was probably about, you know, 30 to 45 pounds ago. She's a little snug these days, but I carry around for old time's sake.
Well, thank you for that background on the sweater. I appreciate
no problem.
That's what you come here for on No Bunts. Some story time with Joel, and jump over to YouTube if you want to see Joel in the sweater. All right, let's round out here the top five things you need to know from the WBC, because there are some key injuries. So let's get to those right now before we get to another phenom in this tournament. Edwin Diaz had a freak accident. He's a closer for the Mets. You know, the trumpets. We've played it for you here on No Bunts. He just signed a huge five-year deal, $102 million, before this season. He's pitching for Puerto Rico, last game of pool play, spot in the quarterfinals on the line against the Dominican Republic. A monstrous game, a fantastic atmosphere. And Diaz closed it out. Incredible. Everybody on the field celebrating. Then all of a sudden, everything stops. Diaz on the ground. He's injured. His patellar tendon in his right knee injured, and he's expected to be out for the season. So question, Joel, is there anything to these people arguing, we can't have a WBC? No, no, no. Did you see Edwin Diaz's injury? Any validity to that?
In my mind, no. I mean, I'm going to be no. And I mean, even if you want to, you know, kind of include Altuve's injury in that, I mean, Diaz's injury was just 100% freak. It was just bad luck. Like, that's all it was. I mean, it unfortunately happened at the WBC, and I feel so bad for Diaz and Mets fans. Like, that's terrible. But it was just simply bad luck. That's all you can chalk it up to. The Altuve injury where he, you know, hurt his hand, that thing, you know, things like that happen. Tass, guys get hurt in spring training. Gavin Lux tore his ACL a few weeks ago in spring training. So should we not have spring training? You know, Tass, like, it happens in lots of, people are playing sports. Like, people are going to get hurt. Like, it's a natural thing. People get hurt at the Olympics. People get hurt at the World Cup of soccer. People get hurt at the World Basketball Champions, and so on and so on. We don't really hear that kind of talk surrounding those events. Oh, we need to cancel this. We need to cancel that because player A or player B got hurt. I feel baseball kind of gets singled out for that. For the naysayers and the people that want to use this as ammunition to, you know, throw shade on this event or have it canceled, I think that's ridiculous. I think their mind's made up. I don't think they liked it before. I don't think they're ever going to like it. They kind of see it as a glorified exhibition, something that I strongly disagree with. But you can't really cherry pick, you know, these two injuries and say, well, we shouldn't have it because of this. I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, you mentioned Gavin Lux's injury. I just saw this as well from San Diego Padres camp, where Soto was removed from a B game because they have quite often split squads where you have a couple games going on. He had a mild left oblique strain. Should we have B games? Should there be split squads? Mm-hmm. And later that same afternoon, their catcher Austin Nola left their A game, a Cactus League game, after being hit in the nose with a pitch. Ooh. Stuff happens, it's unfortunate there. So hopefully all's well with those guys, and obviously Edwin Diaz. I do want to add in this slightly bright outlook for Edwin Diaz, because he is expected to miss the season, but I thought this was interesting. Due to how it was handled, there's a chance he could come back this season. This is interesting reporting from Will Salmon at The Athletic. The longer the knee goes without being operated on, the more scarring develops. So the fact that the Mets medical staff was in Miami helped him get multiple opinions right away. It happened Wednesday night, and then he had the surgery Thursday afternoon. And then to add on to that, a nice touch from Mets owner Steve Cohen when Diaz returned to his home. What was waiting for him there in Florida was a trainer, a nutritionist, and a personal chef, courtesy of Cohen and the Mets. So likely out for the season, but that stuff may have expedited it just a touch, and usually takes 8 months. But there have been instances where a player comes back in as quick as 6 months. So the fact that they got it done early, hopefully bodes well. You mentioned Jose Altuve, and this was number two on our list of things you need to know from the WBC. He was also injured. Second baseman was playing for Venezuela. He's at the plate, got hit with a pitch, broke his thumb. Now, that guy is just the lifeblood of the champs. He is a great teammate, heartbeat of the team. And, you know, from a fan's perspective, and in my opinion, just a very, very, very likable guy. He's probably out for a couple months. So how do you think this affects the outlook for the champs?
Yeah, I mean, I think Houston's got a lot of depth on that team where they can absorb the loss of a guy like Altuve. And I don't say that lightly, because Altuve is, he's a very unique player. He's a great player. Like you said, Tess, he's the heart and soul of that team. You know, he's been there through all the good times. He's signed that deal. You know, he's been in Houston a long time. Important player on that team. But just from a strictly baseball and talent and roster construction standpoint, I mean, Houston's obviously not as good of a team, you know, while he's out of the lineup, but I don't really see this like affecting Houston's championship chances too much. I still think they're going to win the American League West. I still think they're going to go deep into the playoffs. And it might have an effect on, you know, the division and seeding and stuff like that. But still, I don't think Houston is really like in panic mode because Altuve is going to be out for 2 or 3 months. There's more than enough talent on that team where, you know, they can easily stay first or close to first, you know, until he gets back.
All right. Number one on the list of things you need to know from the 2023 WBC. There's another Shohei Ohtani coming. Okay, that's a lot. That's a lot to put on a 21-year-old kid. But Roki Sasaki, Japanese pitcher. He's 21 years old. Currently plays in Japan. And he doesn't hit and pitch like Shohei Ohtani, but the guy is a phenom. And at 17, he was throwing 101, and he was doing it in this tournament as well for Japan. I love this quote from Japanese manager Kuriyama. He said this: "It's hard to explain, but to me, it's as if Sasaki is throwing his soul, not the baseball." Sends tingles down my spine, Joel, to hear baseball lore like that. Yeah, I love it. Sasaki was throwing 101, got up to 102 in this tournament. And like Ohtani's got that nasty splitter that drops to like 90 miles per hour. He's constantly compared to Ohtani. That's what's happening. And last year, actually had a 19 strikeout perfect game in Japan. He struck out 13 in a row, and his next start he pitched 8 more perfect innings before exiting the game in the ninth. That was his first full season in the MPB. Sasaki went 9-4, 2.02 ERA, 173 strikeouts, and 129 in a third inning. So that's 12K per 9 innings. So your question is, will he come to Major League Baseball? Well, he did say it's his dream, but it's very unlikely to happen until 2027. He could sign in 2025, but unlikely to come until 2027. So that's years down the road. The same thing that Shohei Ohtani did, essentially. And that's why there are so many scouts at his semifinal game versus Mexico, where he got the start in the semifinal game. He didn't perform to his capabilities, 3 earned runs in 4 innings. But any thoughts on Roki Sasaki, just to let everyone listening to No Bunts know Sasaki's name?
Yeah, Tass, I'm glad you brought him up, because he kind of seems to be the next big pitching thing coming out of Japan. But, you know, Tass, to your point you just said a minute ago, you're right. He's not going to be able to be posted until 2027, but he can leave early. I would be curious to see how, like, Ohtani's contract, what he gets this year, how it might affect Sasaki's decision. Because remember, Ohtani, I believe, did not wait to get posted. He actually left early and made less money by coming to MLB. He had to take a different deal. I don't know the specifics. I don't want to guess, but I remember Ohtani left before like his actual posting time. Now, he kind of bet on himself, I feel, as a result of that. And, you know, Tess, now, I mean, he's setting himself up for a huge payday by, I feel, kind of leaving early. I mean, I personally think Ohtani is going to get $500 million. Maybe that's a hot take. I don't know. But I would be curious, like, if Ohtani does get a monster number, maybe Sasaki sees that and thinks, well, maybe I should go over sooner too. And then I'll have more prime years left, you know, like when I'm in the MLB. And I don't think he's, you know, I don't know. We can't predict the future. I can't imagine him getting $500 million. But Tass, like if he's an elite starting pitcher, you know, and by what the market is now and what it's going to be like when he's a free agent, I mean, Tass, he could be making $300 to $400 million easily if that talent translates from Japanese baseball into MLB. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. I think the big thing with Japanese pitchers is durability because Tass, you know, like the Japanese, when they're training, like especially when they're young in baseball, they've, you know, people have been kind of critical of some of Japan's training methods. They're very rigorous, but they do produce top end talent. But a lot, like a lot of the pitchers, especially Tass, like a lot of them just blow out their arm. And when they come to MLB, they end up needing surgery. So it'll be interesting to see, yeah, what Sasaki does based on what Otani does. Because I could see him coming early, to be honest. I could see him coming early, betting on himself and setting himself up for a very, very big payday in the MLB.
Yeah, speaking of paydays, as you said, Shohei Otani, a free agent after this season, 2023 offseason, could get half a bill. You said you didn't know if it was a hot take, whether or not he could get $500 million. I saw Forbes also mention that. I'm not sure when they wrote that, but just a quick Google. So maybe it's not the hottest of takes, but it's still hot enough, Joel. It's hot enough for us. The $500 million would obviously be a record in Major League Baseball. And there's a chance. There's a chance. And I just wanted to bring it all back to Shohei Ohtani because he was the story of this tournament, Joel. And there's a couple comments on YouTube as we're doing the show here. Raymond Morris wrote, watching Ohtani in this tournament reminds you of the best player on a really good high school team. He's the pitcher. He's the best hitter. And there's no doubt about it. However, he's doing that on the world stage, which is incredible. And final comment here, because we'll be talking about Shohei Ohtani this season, I'm sure. This one, it's about your shirt from JB. I like Joel's Japanese jacket. Hot. Exclamation point. So just throw that out there. And Joel's going to be a hot teacher here after the break. We got to take a quick break, but he's going to give us a history lesson about the WBC. We'll talk about why this tournament could be even better. We'll talk about improvements. And also Randy Arozarena. Got to talk about him. We'll be right back on No Buns.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, Nano arthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
Welcome back to No Bunts. We will get into the WBC tournament history in a sec, Joel, but you've been asking me, you've been telling me. Tass, I need to tell the people why the WBC is a legitimate tournament, why everyone should be watching at all times. So here's the floor, Joel. Why is the WBC tournament a tournament everyone should be watching?
Okay. Tass, a couple reasons. I mean, first and foremost, it is a very compelling tournament. It's got drama, it's got upsets, it's got patriotism, it's got rabid fans, it's got upsets. It has all of the elements that make a great story, whether it's in entertainment, whether it's in sports, like it has all of those things in it. Tass, this tournament has consistently gotten better and better each iteration of it. 2006, like, it was brand new. I don't think it was that good. 2009, but it has become more and more popular. The level of play is good. And Tess, you're seeing the best players play. Now, is it all of the best players playing? No, it's not. But I mean, if you went through the lineups of, you know, five or six of the best teams, there is a lot of talent on those rosters and they're playing good competitive baseball. It's exciting. It's not sloppy. You know, Tess, you, like, when certain countries play, you look and you listen, you see the crowd reaction. The players, the fans, like, they're so into it. And I really love how the announcers on the different networks, they did a fantastic job of selling this, of promoting this, of describing the atmosphere to the people watching and listening. And I thought that was a great job, just like from a fan standpoint, they were really trying to build that up. It's exciting. And Tass, like, if I love baseball and I like seeing the best players play, and this is the opportunity where I can see the best players play, represent their country. It's just such a compelling event, and it's never going to be on the level of a football World Cup. Absolutely not. I'm not trying to make that case, but, you know, as we have more and more versions of this tournament, it's just going to continue to get better and better. The level of play is going to get better and better. It's just going to become more meaningful. I think more players are going to want to join this. And, you know, Tass, I was, when I was preparing for this, the attendance was up by over 100% in the first round, live attendance. They had over 1 million people. People are interested in this event. When you watch old highlights from like 2006, 2009, and you've got kind of two no-name teams playing, the stadium's like empty. It's like 2,000 people, 4,000 people. That's not a good look. But when you look at the games now, like, even teams that aren't that popular, they're still drawing, you know, 8,000, 10,000, you know, 12,000 fans, and they're boisterous and they're loud. And it's just such a compelling atmosphere. It makes for great TV. It makes for great sports. And if you're a casual baseball fan, this is something you can enjoy. You know, this is something you can enjoy. You can see the best players play, lots of drama, lots of great baseball, just fun. It's just a fun event, but very competitive.
Unquestionably, it's gotten better and better and better. The World Baseball Classic is sort of like your microphone audio quality, I'd say. It's going to get better week to week to week, like the WBC got better tournament to tournament to tournament. We're working on it. We're working on it here.
Okay.
From Atlanta. No, your mic, it's fine. It's fine. But JD's a perfectionist over there. So from Atlanta to Taiwan here, we're trying to make it work. Speaking of Taiwan, pool play in Taiwan, pool play in Japan, pool play in Arizona, and Miami is where it started in this tournament. I wonder if that's one thing that they can change, or if they go status quo, because it didn't end up being a liability for Japan having to play at home and then flying over to North America. They won it, but it was a struggle for some teams. I think it had an effect on Cuba. But anyways, now I'm parsing. The fact is, baseball players love it. And MLB,
oh, they do.
And MLB players don't have the Olympics. So this is their international tournament. And you could see they're absolutely adoring it. I mentioned Trout's comment. There were so many comments about how much people loved playing in this tournament. It's not going anywhere. Rob Manfred, commissioner of MLB, said that it's coming back in 2026, and it's going to be in the same window of time, in March. Mm-hmm. I know people here in North America were saying that could be something that's changed to improve the level of play, to improve the type of players that go into it, because as great as the U.S.'s batting order was, it was incredible, maybe the best batting order ever assembled, 1 through 9, their pitching staff wasn't the same, and it didn't have the same quality. And Manfred said, we want pitching staffs to be at the same quality of the hitters. They didn't have that in Major League Baseball. And I think being in March, where you don't see, pitchers don't have that comfort level that they would if it was in a midseason tournament or if it was in even after the season. Well, and you could even see with the hitters. Trout started slow. Trey Turner started slow. A lot of guys started slow in this tournament because it's in March. Is that something you would like to see changed, or are you fine rolling here in March?
Yeah, March is fine. Realistically, there's no other time you can hold it.
What about a break? Let's cut the season. Like, we have days off in July. I know it would be increasing it, but it's happened in hockey before. We take a couple weeks off to play a tournament, and I not only would the quality even go up just a little bit, just guys would be in better shape. The players' inclusion would probably be higher because guys have been playing more, and the eyeballs would be higher. Definitely in North America. I know in the world they're incredibly high. You had 40 million people watching every game in Japan. They watch more WBC than they watch the World Series, and that's the way it's going to be. They have their own league over there.
Yeah,
but in North America, just to be a bit of a homer here, people would watch it more if it was in midseason, and maybe that doesn't matter, but because it's more of baseball season here, you're up against March Madness and you're up against other sports. That could be their window. July could be their window. There obviously have to be things to be worked out, but you're okay with March.
Yeah, I've seen some possible scenarios. Yeah, where writers have talked about, playing part of it at the beginning of the season and then putting the quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals in July.
Whoa, that's yeah. Interesting. Splitting up the tournament months apart.
Yeah. I read something about that. I thought it was interesting. I just logistically, I don't think that's possible. And Tess, to your point about, the NHL did it for the Olympics. But Tass, I think with this event, there's a lot more moving parts why you can't have it in the middle, because you've got the professional leagues in Taiwan and Korea and in Japan. And, it would take three leagues shutting down, and then as well as MLB. So logistically, I think that would be a pretty tough ask to have it in the summer. Mm. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying it would be a lot more difficult to do. I think March is a good time. I mean, you're talking about it from a North American perspective. I get that.
Absolutely. A nationalist view. Don't care about the rest of the world. I have moved to America for a decade and I don't care about anybody else. No, it's a very good point about shutting down multiple leagues in the middle of the season. Because yes, my ignorant self didn't care to think about that, but that's a very good point.
Yeah. You're right. It's up against some other events, but you can't put it in November and December. That's well into the players' off season. You can't put it in January. That's way too early. There's going to be way more guys getting hurt and stuff. So March, I think, realistically fits. I feel like there's no perfect time for this event. But
what about pitchers, Joel? I know shutting down the other leagues is a problem, but as Manfred came out and said, Adam Wainwright was starting. I mean, they basically had bullpen games here in for the U.S. As solid as Wainwright has been, there wasn't the top level talent for American pitchers to go. Now, around the world, they showed up, and maybe just how popular it gets, the level of the growth in popularity will encourage better pitchers to come play. But even just guys, being warm, being great. Being in baseball mode in July, pitchers are always catching up to hitters in the spring, and that's fine. But you could have them both at peak level if they played for a couple weeks in July. Although, it's asking, there's so many logistics. As I said, they played on two continents and it worked out really, really well. So I guess it would be difficult to go away from this, and maybe I should just stop living that dream, Joel. Maybe we're just going to have a March WBC, and that's just the way it's going to be.
It works for me. I can only speak for myself, but it works for me. But kind of getting back to what you said a couple of minutes ago about the locations, Tass, that's another thing that I actually kind of like about the WBC. I like how it truly is an international tournament where you've got different international venues. With the World Cup of of soccer. Like there's a host country and they just play all the games within that country. But with the WBC, you've got three, sometimes in the past, you've had four different host countries. That I feel like that truly just gives it that much more of an international feel. And Tass, I really feel they've nailed the pools, like in terms of grouping certain countries together to maximize like fan turnout and stuff like that. I think they've done a great job.
Right.
So I would keep that the same. I mean, obviously the travel isn't fair, like if you're coming from, you know, the Asian countries, but I think they get three or four travel days, and obviously like it didn't affect Japan. But yeah, I kind of like how it truly is a global event where the venue is in different countries. I think that's great.
Yeah. And you brought up the groupings of teams in certain locations, and that worked out incredibly well. The U.S. played in Miami for their quarterfinal. They felt like it was a road game against Venezuela,
yeah,
because of the incredible atmosphere there. And it was just, it was phenomenal. They played their pool play in Phoenix. They had Mexico mm-hmm. there, a large contingent of Mexican fans in Arizona. It worked out extremely well. The groupings did work out very well. I can't lie, Joel. I can't lie. It's just in our nature here in sports talk to dissect how much it could be better. And even Manfred mm-hmm. said it as he talked yesterday. He wants it to get better. But obviously, all five of these iterations have improved. But there may be people out there, Joel, that haven't been following this as closely as you and people like me, frankly. So I want you to fill us in on the biggest happenings from each of the five WBC events. A bit of a history lesson with Joel McMillan. So here are the top five storylines in each of the World Baseball Classics.
Top five, top five, top five. Top five, top five, top five.
Yes, the storyline in each of the five World Baseball Classics. That's how I should say it. Let me improve my English. The top storyline in each of the five World Baseball Classics. I had to correct myself. Nobody noticed out there, but I did. I did. The top storyline in each of the five. So let's go back, Joel. Number five, it's the 06 WBC, the inaugural WBC, where our Canada upset our USA.
Yeah. 2000, like when I was kind of, when I pitched this to you and I talked about this with you, there wasn't really a lot to talk about from the 2006 WBC, the inaugural one. So for me personally, and this is just more of a personal one, but, you know, the USA had a star-studded lineup, Hall of Famers, yeah, like Griffey and Jeter and Chipper Jones, but they were no match for a Stubby Clapp and Canadian baseball legend Matt Stairs and MVP Justin Morneau.
Excuse me. Did you say Stubby Clapp?
Stubby Clapp. Best baseball name ever. Stubby Clapp.
Phenomenal. Double P, double B.
Double B, double P.
What a name.
Yeah. But that was cool because, you know, Tass, that was, I mean, you know, like being a Canadian and, you know, you've lived in America a long time, there's always going to be, you know, like Canadians and Americans, they always kind of get up. I feel like it doesn't matter what the sport is. I mean, obviously for some sports it's bigger than others, but the fact that, you know, Canada can say they have a win over America in the WBC, I think is pretty cool. Yeah, Canada, we haven't done well in the WBC, but at least we have this. So that was kind of my favorite moment from 2006.
Okay, moving on to the next one in 09, Korea and Japan's rivalry.
Ooh, yeah, this one was really good. And I can't, you know, stress this enough. Like Japan and Korea have a very, very intense baseball rivalry. I mean, this dates back to, you know, many, many years. And they changed the format in the second tournament test because they wanted to avoid teams being eliminated by run differential. So it was like a modified double knockout round. I forget the specifics. But anyway, long story short, Japan and Korea actually ended up playing each other five times.
Five times?
2009. Yeah, five times, including the finals. Yeah. So, and they split the first four games. But Tass, after one of those games, some Korean players planted Korean flags in the mound. Ichiro did not like this, Tass. There's a video of him on YouTube seeing this, and he's seething. He's shouting at his teammates. he's raging, and you usually don't see that from him.
Absolutely.
And
not.
Then, yeah, it was very, very out of character. And it just goes to show you like how intense that rivalry is. And then they met in the finals again. This was in Dodger Stadium, and the Japanese beat Korea in extra innings. They were actually up, I think, 3-2 in the ninth, and Darvish blew the lead. And then Ichiro hit a two-run single in the 10th, and Darvish actually came back out in the 10th and closed it, which I feel like you would never see today. Like once a closer blows a lead, like the manager's never going to put him out there again.
Right.
So that was really cool to see. But I mean, Tass, that's an intense, intense, intense rivalry, and it's very emotional, and it's deep-seated, and it's rooted in history, and it's a real thing. And this past, like this WBC, Tass, over 60 million Japanese televisions were tuned in to the Korea and WBC game. So you sit there, you earlier you were talking about a North American perspective, but Tass, the TV numbers in Japan for these games, it's through the roof. It's unbelievable what the numbers they're getting.
But are they cutting their cords? That's the thing.
Are they cutting their cords? I don't know. I'll make some calls.
Well, that is really interesting. So the Korea-Japan game, because you said the Korea-WBC game here in 2023, 60 million.
When they played in the pool round, yeah.
Okay. That is a phenomenal number. That is a ridiculous number. I wonder how many were streaming. I guess not many. They're all watching their TVs. Interesting stuff there. You don't see Ichiro get upset. And actually, I was curious because the Japanese team brought out Suzuki's jersey after winning the 2023 final yesterday. It said Suzuki on it. When he played in Japan, did he have Suzuki on his jersey? And then when he played in North America, did he have Ichiro on his jersey? I'm just wondering about the cultural difference there, because it did say Suzuki on his jersey that they pulled out yesterday.
Yeah.
But it said Ichiro when he played on the Mariners.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah, Tess, I didn't even notice that. Yeah, that's weird. I wish they wouldn't write their name in English. I'm sorry. I'm a purist. Like,
yeah.
Put it in Japanese, put it in Chinese, put it in Korean. Yeah, put it in that. The names in English, I mean, it doesn't bother me, but I just, you know, it's more pure with their real names, with their real characters, whatever language it is.
Then you'd get so many more people getting tattoos of those characters, I imagine, rather than the characters they know nothing about. They'll see it on a jersey. Sure, I'll buy that. So, yeah, that was an interesting one, Joel. Thank you for the history lesson there. Now take us to 2013, number three on the storylines here of the five World Baseball Classics. 2013, the Dominicans, they ran the table.
They ran the table, yeah, and then Japan kind of, you know, did the same thing again. That was my big story, you know, and then Japan did the same thing. But, yeah, Dominicans winning in 2013 ran the table. Technically, Tess, they won one extra game because of the format. Japan went 7-0. The Dominicans went 8-0, you know, just for some context. But, yeah, the Dominicans, Tess, are always a threat. Those players always love playing, and they had a very, very good tournament. They certainly didn't have an easy path. Like, they beat Venezuela, they beat Puerto Rico three times, the Netherlands, and I believe they beat the USA on their way to this championship. So they beat some very, very tough teams. I will say this, Tass, my one thing I didn't like about this WBC, they had the finals in San Francisco. Baseball in March in San Francisco, I'm sorry. Not a good venue for it. So that's my only kind of complaint. I feel it would have benefited if they had that in, you know, Miami or Los Angeles. I think that would have been a much better location. Didn't seem as loud for that final. And those two teams, I feel, have a strong baseball rivalry as well. But yeah, Dominicans, first team to go undefeated, run the table. Very, very hard to do.
Baseball in San Francisco in March, it's like playing pickleball in Minnesota. I heard that on a No Dinks podcast, inaugural No Dinks podcast on the No Dunks feed, FYI. All right, let's move on here. The next WBC, U.S. versus the Dominican. Those games, Joel, to you were what stood out before the U.S. won their first WBC in the last tournament in 2017.
Tess, this is what made me fall in love with the WBC. I was a casual fan for the first three. Here's the Adam Jones catch, an iconic WBC moment, robbing his Orioles teammate Manny Machado. This was such an amazing catch. Jones was so pumped up. I mean, that photo's so iconic. But Tash, the first game between the Dominicans and the Americans in the pool round, and Nelson Cruz hit a 3-run home run in the 8th inning. And I suggest anyone listening, Tash, you, whoever, go back and watch that highlight. Watch the bottom of the 8th inning. That is the inning that made me fall in love with this tournament. It was so loud. It was amazing. You know, you said earlier, Tass, it's almost like America's playing away games in America. It was such a cool game. And that's when I really kind of bought into this tournament. Like, wow, this is competitive. This is exciting. You know, this is interesting baseball. So that to me really cemented me like, okay, like this is a legit tournament. You know, USA and Dominican, they played two great games. I wouldn't say it was a rivalry. They just played each other twice. But, you know, the USA, yeah, on their way to their first championship, I thought that was important. Because, you know, Tess, you need American fans to, you know, have interest in this. And, you know, so USA winning.
I guess because
you
know, we're so arrogant. We're so arrogant. We need it, Joel.
Mm-hmm. So, but it was, yeah, but 2017 was just, it was a tournament before this, and you could kind of start to see it really, I feel, take shape and getting better. And there were some compelling games and even more this year. But yeah, the U.S. and Dominican games from 2017 are very, very, very exciting to watch.
All right. And number one, the top storyline from each of the five WBCs, obviously Shohei Ohtani was ridiculous in this one, but it was also Randy Arozarena's coming out party playing for the Mexican team, Joel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously it goes without saying Shohei. I mean, he's an unbelievable star, but I mean, Arozarena was just so good. I mean, he had so many key hits. He robbed a home run. He knows how to work the crowd. I feel he's very aware of his showmanship abilities. He was one of the best hitters in the tournament. He's got such an interesting story about how his life, how he kind of left Cuba, you know, went to Mexico so he could play professional baseball. It's a very interesting story. They were talking about it, but he was everywhere. Fans were loving it. People don't really get to see him, Tass, because he plays for Tampa Bay. They're a small market team. They don't really get on a lot of national games. So people don't really see him, but in this tournament they did. And he's just, they need to put him in national games. He's a showman. He's a phenomenal player. He plays extremely hard. He plays extremely passionate. And I feel like he really embodies like the modern day player of being great, but, you know, showing emotion. And, you know, this was on full display in this tournament. You know, people need to take note of who this guy is. He's a very exciting, amazing, and charismatic player. And that really shone through this entire tournament.
Yeah, he was out there shagging balls with his sombrero and cowboy boots.
I saw that.
During a pitching change, he was signing autographs for fans. You mentioned the home run robbery of Okamoto. What a catch. And Ohtani said even when he went up in the 9th inning of that semifinal game, he said he wanted to keep it away from Arozarena in left field because he was catching everything. I saw he had 5 putouts in the final 5 innings of that game. Yeah. That doesn't happen in baseball quite often, an outfielder out there doing that. So he was catching everything, and you taught us everything, Joel. So appreciate you taking us through those 5. After the break, one more quick one here. We'll get to the top 5 clothing items from this tournament. We'll describe it for the audio listeners out there. And audio listeners were asking, how the heck did Joel end up in Taiwan? We'll answer that question, too, after the break.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top 3 things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Top five. One more top five for you. Top five. Here on No Bunts, the top five articles of clothing, uniforms, helmets, even celebrations. Joel, I know you wanted to get into this, so let's jump into it. All from the 2023 WBC. What were they wearing? How did they look? At number five, it's Great Britain's crown, the crown that they had when they celebrated a home run, Joel. This was a beautiful touch.
Yeah, I loved it. I liked how team just kind of leaned into the kind of stereotypical celebrations, but I thought it was very fun. I mean, having a guy knighted and wearing a crown and for the Great Britain team, I thought that was amazing. And there was I don't know if it was just one player or other players did it, but I only saw the same guy do it. But Tass, he would hit a double and then he would start drinking tea. Yeah, so I liked how they just kind of leaned into it. But yeah, the Great Britain home run celebration, that was awesome. Loved it.
Oh, the stereotypes. Yes, please. Happy to have them.
They just kind of leaned into I mean, you know, the tea thing, and the Mexicans had the sombrero. But I mean, the guys were having fun. They, you know, it was just kind of fun to see.
Oh, I'm not being sarcastic. I liked all of it. And also the cape that went along with the crown there, the purple sort of cloak type thing. I guess it's not a cape. It's not a cape. It's a cloak, right, JD? Is that the the word I'm looking for?
I think it's cloak, I think, but cape works.
Okay.
With the royal purple, it's
royal great. Royal purple with the fur trim and the crown as they celebrate a home run. And he was knighted, as you said there, Joel. I forgot about that part. Great
stuff.
That's
right. He gets knighted.
He gets knighted. Yeah, got to. So that's number five on our top five articles of clothing at the WBC. Number four, the Colombian uniform. You like this this bold yellow road uniform specifically.
Yeah. Well, both of them. Yeah. Like Tass, I like the blue ones and I like the yellow ones. I like the yellow one. It's a bit brighter. These just look really, really good. They look really clean. These are basically very similar to the Boston Red Sox City Connect jersey, which I don't like because why are the Red Sox wearing yellow? To me, that doesn't make any sense. Maybe there's a story behind it. I think it looks bad in Boston, but I think it looks great for the Colombian national team. Just looks so good. I love that. I love that color combination. Just looks very crisp, very clean to me.
Okay. Another bold one at number three, the Venezuelan uniform. There's a lot going on.
I love it.
A lot going on here. Blue, you know, for the majority of the chest and the back, and then yellow along the shoulders and the sleeves, a bold yellow. So you got some bold colors, both the blue and yellow standing out there, and you're seeing Acuña, who had all the accoutrements as well, you know, had all the yellow around it as well. What'd you like about these, Joel?
Yeah, I thought Acuña looked like the best player in uniform, if I can phrase it like that. You know, I love how Acuña plays. He's got the top buttons open, the jewelry. Yeah, I just thought he looked very cool. He had some big moments in this tournament too, and him jumping up and the jewelry flying over everywhere, and you know, just those bright colors. I just kind of think it embodies that you know, that spirit, the way he plays. And I just thought it looked good. I like those bright colors. I think they look very good on TV.
Okay, number two of the top five articles of clothing at the WBC, the Australian batting helmet. We went with a batting helmet here, Joel.
Had to. Tess, okay, what do you think about the Oakland A's uniform colors? Where do you stand on the Oakland A's?
I like them a lot. And
yeah, me too. That's why I picked this.
That's why you picked this. more just because it looks like an Oakland A's uniform. That's exactly what I thought initially, and because of the A on the helmet.
Yeah.
How could you not?
I just think it looks good. Yeah.
It looks solid. You just like the green and gold.
I think it's a classic. I think it's a classic color combo, and especially for baseball. Yeah. I just like the way it looks. Nothing more, nothing less.
It is one of those color combos that you can't have too many of. I would say
that's true.
I think the one in MLB, correct me if I'm wrong, but there isn't really another green and gold. I mean, the Padres have a gold accent to their brown, which is also another unique combo. You only need one. But is there another green and gold? I don't think so, right? Oakland stands
out. No, I don't believe so, no.
Yeah, and it's also my high school colors as well. So kind of gaudy if you don't do it well.
Nice.
But the Gordon Grayden Hawks did it well as well. And the Oakland Athletics obviously do it well. And so did Team Australia, advancing to the quarterfinals for the first time in WBC history. So congrats to them.
That's right.
But also congrats to the Netherlands, who have the best uniform of them all, Joel.
Look at that. Yeah. I love this uniform.
Explain it. Describe it to people.
Yeah. I mean, the hat. I love the way the hat looks with the crown, the orange and the dark blue, and then pinstripes, I feel, is an iconic look for a baseball uniform. Again, like, just looks very clean. And I like the very small font above Netherlands, Kingdom of Netherlands. I just like the way that looks. Typically, I don't really like white uniforms, but I just absolutely love this one. And Tess, when I was at the WBC, like when we were in Taichung a couple of weeks ago, I thought, oh, I'm just going to buy a Kingdom of Netherlands hat there. Nope, none for sale. So, I was a bit bummed out. But I just think those uniforms just look so good. I love the pinstripes. Classic baseball look.
Did you get online to buy one?
Not yet. Not okay. yet.
Because that could be our uniform here on No Bun Stroll. I like that hat, too. You're totally right. The Kingdom of Netherlands with that orange crown. There's something about
it. It looks good.
It is good.
I'd wear it.
Yeah, JD loves it too. Oh, nice. Here we go. We got our team.
let's get the Netherlands caps.
Let's get the Netherlands caps. If you haven't listened to last week's No Bunts, as Joel alluded to there, went to the final pool play game in Taiwan between Taiwan and Cuba. What a story Cuba was just to get to the pool play. A five-way tie in your pool there, Joel, at 2-2. Everybody... 2-2, but Cuba advanced there. It was a good tournament for them, even though it ended kind of poorly with that wild game against Adam Wainwright in the U.S. Okay, so we got our top five. Let's quickly go through some worst mentions, worst nominees here for bad attire. We're going back to Great Britain. Their uniforms, Joel, you didn't like this ridiculously simple and ridiculously small font on their chest.
What is that? Like, I honest question. Anyone answer? Like, what is that? It looks like they weren't even trying with this at all. It's so bad, it's good. It got roasted perfectly on social media. I think on one of them, two tasks, the E actually fell off one of the jerseys on one of the players. Yeah, I mean, these are so bad, they're good. And even with the hat logo, too, I mean... Did they even try? I mean, I know that like artists come up with different designs, but like if this is what they settled on, I want to see what they passed on. If they're like, yeah, this is the best we have. I want to see what didn't make the cut.
And
yeah,
we're showing you the road uniforms as well, which are a red, which I don't mind the color scheme. They went gray for the homes. Correct me if I'm wrong. Gray homes, which were pretty blah. And then the red, I like the red better, but the font stays the same.
Yeah.
Which is extremely simple and extremely small, it feels like.
I know.
The sizing.
I know.
I'm not a fan of tiny fonts on a chest. And this player seems a little bit smaller, so I think proportions are better. And maybe they're selling to slender people, because I think it would fit better. Maybe that's who they had in mind when they designed this small font. So it does fill out a little bit better, but I'm totally with you, Joel. Totally with you.
Yeah.
And one I wanted to include were the American batting helmets. I know we're getting to a point where there's sponsorships on everything, but this was jarring to me, Joel, seeing a monstrous T-Mobile sponsorship on the side of the batting helmet. I want it pure. I just want it pure. And correct me if I'm wrong, there isn't sponsorships like this on MLB batting helmets, where it's literally the entire side of a batting helmet. It's too much. I just want the logo. I think you have to keep it somewhat pure. If you've got some sticky stuff on there, that's cool. But the branding, it's too much.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, Tess, you're right. I don't think they put advertisements on batting helmets in MLB, but I think it's just a matter of time before they do. They put the Nike swoosh. I think some other teams have some corporate sponsorship deals as well. It's happening in other sports. Baseball's not immune. With the USA, I feel like they should just have better jerseys, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. I'm not really a fan. I don't think they have bad jerseys, but I feel like they could be doing better with the logos and with the hat. Just doesn't work for me. The white USAs look good, but got to update the logo. And I feel like you could be very creative with the American logo too, but they kind of run that out with the S and it kind of looks like a wavy flag. I'm like, that's it? That's the best you guys came up with? Come on. We can do better than that.
I agree. There could have been more with the American uniforms. It just was it was fairly simple. Seeing them the first time, seeing Captain America, as they were calling Mike Trout throughout this tournament, mm-hmm. with a jersey, didn't yell captain to me. There wasn't enough. It wasn't enough captain-y. There wasn't enough on that jersey. It was overly simple. But we got to simplify the end of the show, Joel. You know what we're going to do? We're going to save this question about why you ended up in Taiwan till next week, because we're running out of time here, and we're going to try and reel some people in to next week as well. So come on back to hear that next week. You think that'll bring people back? I think so. I think so too. Yeah, we don't know what the actual show content's going to be next week.
It's going to be all that.
It's going to be all Joel.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Give the people what they want.
All right.
How disappointed are they walking away from this podcast hearing the Taiwan story?
That's fair. No, we got to get wrapping up. We'll decide on what our show is going to be leading into the MLB season. It'll be just a couple days before the MLB season. Can't wait to do this all year with you, Joel. I'm excited. Please subscribe to The Athletic MLB Show, again, wherever you pod, or on YouTube to find us. And if you want to subscribe to The Athletic, great deal going on right now for the entire website. 12 months, $1 per month. That's $12 for the year. TheAthletic.com/NoDunks. TheAthletic.com/NoDunks for that. We'll be back next week. Joel, did the cats eat?
Cats are eight. I'm going to go say goodnight to them before I go to bed. Give them all a big hug, and then it's bedtime.
All right. Well, say goodnight to us. For us, I should say.
All right.
Because they ate. Say goodnight to the cats for us. We'll say goodnight to you, Joel.
Well,
and we'll see everybody out there next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.